Hello and welcome to the Touchline Frogger podcast. I'm your host Lewis, and this week we're going to be reviewing the 2013-2014 season across Europe. Our guests today are Manchester United supporters Io and Gaz. How are you doing, guys?
Hello. Sam,
first. We have Arsenal fan Mickey.
How are you doing, fella?
And returning is Palace fan Ruben.
Hi, you alright?
Okay, so guys, let's start with the Champions League final since we haven't had the chance to cover it yet. Io, Real Madrid managed to finally end their hoodoo. What did you think of the game?
I think it was more captivating and entertaining. We knew how Atleti were going to set up. Obviously, Casillas made a stupid error to give Atleti the lead. But it just didn't look like Real Madrid were going to break down. You've got to give credit to Ancelotti. He made a subs out that the lads I was watching, we were calling for, saying bring on Marcelo, bring on Isco, because obviously Khedira, I don't want playing Khedira in a game where the team is sitting deep, because Khedira's not going to really unlock on the back four, and Atleti weren't really breaking with speed, so there's no point having Khedira on the pitch. So yeah, just for, obviously Rangers were a bit lucky to get the goal on the 90th, with what, 90 seconds remaining, and then obviously we'll know what happened extra time, but I do think Real Madrid deserved it. I think they've been the best team in the Champions League, like they've just been obliterating teams for joke in the Champions League, so I think they did earn it. But yeah, I was gutted for Atleti, but I think Real Madrid did deserve to win it. Because I don't really like seeing teams defend for their lives, because that's just boring.
I thought starting Costa was a mistake.
Oh, so stupid.
I can kind of understand why he'd want to, but surely he'd be sensible enough to say, like, you're not fully fit. And, like, how can you recover from a hamstring injury that quickly? I don't know.
Yeah.
But
How much horse placenta.
Yeah. Even if he...
I don't know what sense you'd be in that they were giving him at bloody in Madrid, because there was no way you can recover from a hamstring injury. Especially in the way Atleti play with so much intensity.
Mm. How long did he last? 7 minutes?
Eight
was less than 10 minutes. And think about the game went into extra time. So they basically had two subs to utilise in, what, 110 minutes of football?
Yeah.
In the biggest game.
It's the way they play the game as well, is that they needed all the players possible. They needed all their three subs.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, if they hadn't started Costa, then they'd have had an extra sub, and that might have come in really useful.
Because they looked so leggy at the end, didn't they? I mean,
yeah. That was always going to happen, though. Like, they were always going to see it, and Madrid were going to grind them down. So, like, but towards the end, I was thinking, like, this... Real Madrid might not actually get their goal, but then when they got one, you knew they'd go on to get more. So
one thing that game showed, yeah, was in modern football how important having fullbacks that are good going forward are. Because when a team are rigid and it's set up well, your fullbacks tend to have a lot of ball, especially a lot of possession, yeah, especially in wide areas. So it shows how key is that. Yeah, how key. Like even Carvalho had a lot of the ball, but he wasn't really doing enough on that right flank. Like he got a lot of ball in his position. He didn't put the ball in straight away, kind of cut back, and that kind of shut down a lot of attacks. But as soon as Marcelo came on, you saw how him and Di Maria were able to get the ball moving and generate space on the left wing and put a lot of dangerous balls to the box. And obviously, he managed to get the goal in extra time, and Di Maria got a goal from the left flank. So it shows how crucial having a fullback that's good going forward is.
By the way, Di Maria masterclass. He was.
Okay.
Can we just? I need to take a second. Okay. Right. Can we say Di Maria was essentially man of the match for that game?
Easily. I don't think he was.
And also, we need to address the fact that Graham Souness before the match, Modric was a
fire. I hate Graham Souness now.
Listen, how can he say? He said, "This is what he's worth." He goes, does he score? No. Does he create a lot? Not really.
That's like
saying Javi's shit, innit? But the thing is, because it's Luka Modric, because it's not Javi, he can get away with saying that about Luka Modric. Like, that's just ridiculous. Like, I think that just shows why some of the old school British philosophy of football is so outdated. If we're thinking guys so bad, like Luka Modric or fireside players, that's where a lot of people and.
Do you remember when we had the conversation about what you were on the pod, sorry to cut you, and something to Ant, and he was like, playing, like, Souness, there's not many players, Souness has a silly amount of experience. And for me, it's just disappointing to hear that from a player with as much pedigree as Graham Souness. And
yeah,
who's been doing punditry for that long. It's just like, well,
and also, I asked him about what does he think about Real Madrid, why didn't they win the league? He goes, oh, obviously they didn't score enough goals, they didn't defend well. And then they asked him, oh, where do you think they could have gone wrong in attacking? He looked stumped, because I was thinking, this guy has not been watching Real Madrid, because the same Real Madrid didn't score enough goals when they've got Ronaldo, Benzema, etc. is a bit stupid. And then when they asked him what's their problems defensively, he didn't say anything. So I know this is off topic, but seriously,
well, yeah, guys, I mean,
off my TV. They need to get him off my TV.
Can I just interrupt and just introduce a little new feature that we're going to be doing for the England game? So you can just turn off Graham Souness now. We're going to be doing in-game discussions where you turn down your TV, you put us on, and we'll guide you through the game.
Hey.
We'll give you a discussion through the game. So no more Graham Souness, no more Andy Townsend, no more Michael Owen. So we don't have to have debates like this again.
Sorry, the thing with the Modric thing as well, I just wanted to butt in quickly, is that did Souness not watch Modric at Tottenham for 3 to 4 years, however long Modric was here? Did he not watch Modric ball every game he played? Obviously, he struggled at first slightly.
And the reason why he struggled was because, I think it was one day Ramos was playing him as a defensive midfielder. And obviously, the English game and the way he was playing him, it weren't like Guardiola number four, where he's getting a lot of balls, getting the ball dictated. It was just has a robust defensive midfielder. So that's the reason why he struggled at the beginning. And that wouldn't have to do with his ability. It was just to do one day Ramos was being a retard.
What did the fellow pundit say about that comment, though? Did they not, like...
Because who was the other? I think it was Jamie Redknapp, who's an idiot anyway, and I can't remember who the other pundit was. So yeah, they kind of just let him kind of speak.
Was Gary not in the studio? No, Gary was doing the commentary, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think Gary would probably have pulled him up.
Or Gary would have just given him a stare. That he does.
Anyway, yeah, I think the final. Yeah, you know, the final. In terms of everyone giving the credit to Gareth Bale and Ronaldo, like all the headlines about Gareth Bale.
Does Modric realise
that? And Ramos. Sergio Ramos is actually one of his underrated defenders out there. I think, you know, those three were probably more key to the win than anything. I was incredibly disgusted by Ronaldo's celebration. I was disgusted by that.
No, but don't you think that was a celebration for his performance in the Champions League overall, not just in that game? I know he was a bit missing in that game, but don't you think that celebration kind of justified his performance in the Champions League overall?
I don't know. I really don't know, because it's just like, I've seen other players have equally good Champions League campaigns, and they don't...
Who?
Messi 2009?
Oh, F Messi, bro. That was painful, that final, man.
Okay, there we go. Like,
no. Messi's because Messi was good. Was at the Chelsea when they beat Chelsea in the semis. Messi was good.
I'm talking about Messi.
Yeah,
no, I'm talking about 2011. There's certain players that have had equally good Champions League campaigns, or even World Cup campaigns, if we're talking about tournament format, and their celebrations don't seem as ego-driven.
Yeah, 100%.
Do you know what I'm saying? And it's just like...
Why is it ego-driven?
Seems to make it about him, sort of thing.
Really.
He scored a goal.
I think it is a bit ego-driven.
To me, he just seemed that, like, he had such an awful, awful game, and he was frustrated, and he finally banged a goal.
But then everyone
seems to know Ronaldo's head that he's ego. He doesn't. He's all about himself. That's just a typical Ronaldo.
I
don't understand. He scored a goal in the Champions League final, even though the game was done. He scored a goal. I think he seemed frustrated. He banged the goal.
Right now. Let me say this. We're adult enough and we're savvy enough to realise what body language is, okay? There's certain celebrations that you can say, okay, you're a bit more, okay, this is the teammates, oh, it was a goal, yeah, it's nice to score a goal, yeah, that's great. And then there's certain celebrations where it's all about him. Taking off your shirt, doing all these kind of poses and stuff, it's just like, really? That seems like, even if it's in a final, that seems like, a celebration that's purely about the occasion as opposed to I'm the one who scored?
I don't know. That's for issues.
Okay.
You can hear that a lot for United, a lot. Like when...
Did you see his reaction when Bale scored?
Who, Ronaldo's?
Yeah.
What did he do when Bale scored?
He was at the halfway line. He sprinted more for that celebration than he did throughout the whole game.
Alonso, did you see Alonso sprint like when?
That was great.
Guys, what would you say your moment of the Champions League this season has been?
Everest goal.
Individually or just...
Listen, those 20 seconds, that whole minute, whatever it was, of Everest goal, yeah, it was magical.
I didn't even watch it live. I had it recorded, but I avoided the score. And when it went in, like, my inherent United sympathy came out, and I just loved it for about a minute. And then it went back to being, oh yeah, that was obviously going to happen, Bayern were going to win. But that goal, like, just the circumstances and the finish, it was just brilliant.
That was mine.
I don't know if I have one. I'll be honest with you. Like, none of my teams that I like did particularly well in this campaign, so I'm just going to say pass, no comment.
I think the moment,
if I'm looking for more,
I enjoyed Ramsey's goal in Dortmund.
For United, I think probably Van Persie's hat-trick goal. Vinicius's goal. I was expecting us to get hammered, so I was going bonkers. I think who scored a second? Was it Adrian Lopez who scored a second goal against Chelsea?
Yeah,
that was my favorite because I was desperate for Chelsea to go out. So
Diego's goal against Barcelona.
Also, Diego Costa's goal. I think it was against kind of like right from the halfway line. Saw the guy dummy. I slotted it like it was a beauty. It was a great goal. Should we talk about the goals of the Champions League?
Sorry,
we could talk about all the Champions League goals we liked.
Yeah, go on.
I think one of the great goals of the Champions League, there was Diego Costa one, I think it was against Zenit, where he kind of like took on like two people, ran from like the left side of the pitch, slotted it. Also, there was Cristiano Ronaldo's, I think it was it Galatasaray?
Yeah, where
he bamboozled the Buey, poor Buey. I don't think.
Didn't he score like a hat trick there? Was it a hat trick?
Yeah, he scores a hat trick every week. To be fair, but yeah, that goal as well. Obviously, Patrice Evra. If not, I'm not going to give Patrice Evra a goal for that performance, so he don't even count. And I think Gareth Bale gets Schalke. Was it Schalke? Yeah, where he showed a great bit of footwork in the box to hit it in the bottom corner. And Podolski's goal against Bayern Munich.
That was a screamer.
Awesome finish. I knew it was going to happen.
I couldn't get excited about that goal, though, because...
You knew you were never going to go through.
Yeah, it was just... It was pointless. I think the highlight of the Champions League for me being an Arsenal fan was that first 10 minutes at the Emirates against Bayern where we absolutely rattled them.
Yeah, and that was good. When Ozil sent Boateng shots,
and then he missed a penalty. And then when he
did Arteta play that game?
No, I can't remember.
I don't understand why Ozil took the penalty. So I don't understand why anybody in
Arsenal takes set pieces. No, he didn't play.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't understand why anyone in Arsenal takes set pieces when Arteta's about. Because he's by far the best set piece taker.
Oh, yeah, Arteta's quality when it comes to penalties.
Because remember Everton, he used to hit free kicks from
Pins. He don't take free kicks for Arsenal. For
because Walker got that set piece clause in his contract, didn't it?
He's always a good free kick taker as well. Like, that's why.
Because that's because also he's been taking it from... It's Walker's been injured. Because obviously Walker's got that clause in his contract. He's been taking on set pieces.
We're all for it taking free kicks. I mean, Cazorla's free kick was the first free kick we scored since.
Keeper should have done better with that anyway.
I think when Arteta scored or Podolski scored one last year, I think.
I think Marshall. Oh no, it wasn't Marshall. Sorry. McGregor was it? I think he should have done much better with a free kick.
It's difficult because obviously 9 times out of 10 the ball's going over the wall, so keepers always move to the left. So that's why you've seen guys like Wan has done it once. So Wan did it against United. Rooney did it against Chesney in the 8-2. Got quite a lot of Henri to do it sometimes where they go keeper side because the keeper's always anticipating
to go the other side and they take a step.
The other side. Yeah, so obviously, And when it's hit with such speed, that one step, you're finished. It doesn't
matter. It was quite a flat trajectory as well. So, like,
it was very freaky. And it was in the top end. So, like,
yeah.
Obviously, if he didn't anticipate, he would have saved it. But the fact that because he anticipated, he had no chance. So, I'm not even too sure if I could fault him for that.
I think every goalkeeper would sort of, you know, afterwards, they would go into training and think about it and think, you know, I should have done this better, I should have done that better, but...
I shouldn't have anticipated.
Yeah, but what can you do, you know? I mean, yeah. If it goes the other side and he makes a save, he's not saying that, is he? So.
Yeah, exactly. It's just the gamble that you take with a free kick.
Yeah, it's the same with penalties as well. It's the same sort of thing with penalties, isn't it, mate? There's always a guess element to it, where you anticipate where the attacker's going to go.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, guys. Anyone else want to add anything onto the Champions League before we move on to like Premier League?
No.
No.
Yeah, we all flock Champions League here, so, and there's no Chelsea fans, so let's just move on.
Yeah. Thank God for that. So where do you guys want to start? I mean, I suppose the obvious talking point was the player of the season. Not so much that Suarez won it, but I mean. Yeah, Steven Gerrard was ahead of Yaya Toure in the Football Writers.
Ridiculous.
Player of the year.
It's English bias, that basically.
Yeah, and I mean, let me ask you guys a question. I mean, Yaya Toure came out a few months ago and said that
he's an idiot.
He doesn't feel that he's respected because he's an African player. But don't you think that?
I think that's stupid.
He is sufficiently rated. He's an idiot.
But don't you think this sort of plays into his favour that, you know, the Football Writers put Steven Gerrard ahead of him and maybe he isn't getting the credit that he quite deserves?
Well, it just depends on how you...
In general, I think he is.
Yeah, it's just that, like, at the end of the day, you need to think about, okay, is that the respect that you really want from them? Like, at the end of the day, writers are who people like, Dickinson, all these, Patrick Barclays, these are the writers that they do the voting.
Mm.
The ones that do the writing for the newspapers, the Guardian, the Times.
Yeah, I don't know who actually gets. I don't know if it's everyone in the media, or I don't know how it quite works. But
opinion matters. That's as far as the editorial. Whose opinion matters? That's what I'd be telling them. Whose opinion matters? Because these guys aren't coaches. These aren't guys with expert knowledge of the game. This is purely for vanity. It's purely
vanity.
Yeah. Yeah, but I do believe, obviously, as a footballer, you want to be globally respected, especially by the people who comment on the game, because they do have a lot of sway on the opinions of many fans. So, obviously, with the Yaya Gerrard thing, that's insanity. Yaya was just been better than Steven Gerrard since he started the Premiership, period. There's not been one period when Gerrard's outperformed Yaya Toure since Yaya's been in the Premiership. But obviously, I don't think that's a bias because Gerrard's an African footballer or anything. I just think because it's Steven Gerrard, there's just a general bias to Steven Gerrard, period.
It's sentiment, I think, the season Liverpool had, isn't it?
It's all that poetry, bollocks, it's Liverpool's year, all that, you know, let's go again.
Especially when you consider that, you know, there's Liverpool fans that weren't happy with him in December.
Yeah.
He did look poor at the start of the season, to be fair.
Especially, I think one of the games was when he came Emirates and, Ramsey and them were just running rings round. He just looks lost. But obviously then Rodgers changed his system, which protected him a lot more. He had, like, two players who did a lot of running and a system where he could get on the ball and he wasn't asked to do as much defensive work. So
Henderson's been key in terms of...
And Joe Allen. Let's not forget Joe Allen. Dralin has been doing bits as well, especially in terms of like getting on the ball and doing a lot of running and stopping other people from playing. I think Dralin is on the right, but I think in terms of Yael's comment about him being not rated because he's African, I think he's off his head because he's not rated because it's because in the things that matter in the massive tournaments, he hasn't really had a massive impact. Like he's never, obviously, no one really watches African Nations Cup, but he's always had a poor African Nations Cup. One at the World Cup, see the Ivory Coast. I don't remember him doing anything in the Champions League for Man City. He hasn't really done much.
Like, forget Ivory Coast. Listen, he can talk when he reps in Champions League, like when he truly reps in the Champions League as a talisman.
He's been getting bossed when he played against Ajax. Christian Eriksen and De Jong showed him level. They played against Dortmund. My boy Gundogan was running the rings around him. So against Barca, they're getting passed off the pitch. So until you're dominating games in the big games, how Bastian Schweinsteiger has Paul Scholes has in the past, Gerrard has in the past, Xabi Alonso, these are guys at university rated because there's been big performances by them in the Champions League, the biggest stage, and in their respective international tournaments for some of them. That's why they're university rated. Until Yaya Toure does that, he's not going to get the same universal rating. As long as they've been in Africa, it's because he hasn't been banging. Because Sami Eto'o, he was an African striker, but he was university rated. There was periods where there was a toss-up between him and Thierry Henry, whether Arsenal fans like it or not. But obviously, Henry was better. But also a debate where, oh, it's Eto'o the best striker in the world. Because at Barcelona, in the Champions League, he was absolutely killing it. Mm. So I think that's what Yaya needs to do.
And equally, Drogba was criminally overrated, and he was overrated, of course.
Please, no Drogba talk business today.
Alright, so guys, any objections to Luis Suarez being player of the year?
No.
Okay. Alright, so I guess we'll move on to manager of the season. I mean, a bit of debate between two obvious candidates, Tony Pulis and
CRO, Brendan. Tony Pulis, isn't it? Come to me a year ago, I hated this man with every fibre in my body. It was the antithesis to what I consider good football. But listen, man, Palace were going to get relegated in like November, in my opinion. They were going to be finished, right? It's not just the fact that he made them solid and made them, you know, essentially a winning team. It's still a Pulis start, but it isn't as barbaric as what it was at Stoke, and that's what has made me think, like, it's really turned my head. I'm like, okay,
we do have players who can properly play. It's far from hoofball. It was in like the first couple of weeks, but like, yeah, he's done much. We play much more attractive football than Stoke did. It's still not great, but you know.
Yeah, but like, I've seen a few times on the counter with like Bolasie and Panchen. I'm punching, they've really looked very, very dangerous, and the ball's been playing on the ground slick and aggressive. And even if he was playing regimented football, the fact that he took Crystal Palace, who, when they came up, I said, listen, these guys might as well start booking their coaches to go to Plymouth in that next season, because they ain't got a chance to survive.
Plymouth.
The fact that they didn't even just survive. Didn't they come back 11th, 12th, like mid-table?
Yeah, like it was comfortably achieved mid-table.
He worked miracles, absolute miracles. And not even just that, the fact that people were going away to Crystal Palace and thinking, oh, this is a tough game. Like, and this is a team that's just been promoted. There's teams in the Premiership.
Selhurst is a fortress,
Okay, calm down,
Ruben. No, it fucking is, right? No, if I may, like, he plays two wingers, which, like, not that many managers do. Like, often they'll play, like, more of an attacking mid on the left and a winger on the right or something. But he plays two, and then that turns it into a back six when we don't have the ball. And that's, like, key. And he's just got the tactics bang on. So, and he's taken a team from being relegated before Christmas to mid-table. So he's obviously done an amazing job, but I still think Rodgers is probably more deserving.
The only reason I put Pulis above Rodgers is because I think what they achieved is very similar, but obviously in different contexts.
Yeah.
Which is essentially they overachieved with resources that were limited in comparison to their, you know, their competitors in their immediate vicinity. However, the one reason I put Pulis above Rodgers is because the time constraint. Rodgers has had a team that he was with before. He had a season prior.
Fair enough,
and obviously, he had a pre-season, whilst Pulis literally took him bang in the middle of the season. So, that's the only reason I can't...
Before he took over, they had 4 points after 11 games. So, like, when you think about it, that's ridiculous. 4 points after 11 games, and he's kept them up. And not just kept them up, they've finished, close to top 10?
Yeah, if we came, like, 16th, it wouldn't be... He wouldn't deserve it, because people say, oh no, how can Pulis get it? He only, like, they didn't get relegated, it's not that amazing, but getting someone off the bottom to 11th, and, like, winning the bottom half of the table is amazing. But I still think it's easier to go from bottom to 11th than it is to go from 7th to 2nd.
True. But Liverpool, like people say about resources, but they forget that since 2008, I think when did the Sheikhs come to City? Was it 08, 09 season? Around that period, Liverpool have spent 60 to 70 million more than Manchester United, who in that period have probably won at least three titles.
Mm.
So they've, I think since the creation of the Barclays Premier League, the Premier League's in 1992, only Man City and Chelsea have spent more money than Liverpool. So they have been pumping in cash from the get-go. But don't get me wrong, I don't take it from the achievement of Brendan Rodgers. I think it's a fantastic achievement. But I think the overachievement of Liverpool compared to Palace, I think Palace is slightly more significant, because where Liverpool's overachievement, you have to look in context, because they were underachieving for a very, very long time. Because teams like Everton and Spurs should not be finishing above Liverpool. Newcastle finished above them one season as well. So I think Liverpool kind of got back into a rightful place, whereas Palace were reached a place that they never should be. When was the last time Palace were like 11th? Maybe in the days of Wright. What's that? That prick on TV. Yeah, Mark Wright, that wanker. Yeah, so I think Palace will go to Palace, man. I think he did miracles.
How emasculated would you feel if you were Ian Holloway?
Oh, yeah.
I don't really have that much sympathy for him. Like, he can get people up, but you can't keep them up.
I think he's a Championship level manager, and that's his level.
Definitely, yeah. The thing is, though, like, he made some decent signings. Like, people, like, he got Puncheon, and he got Campagna, who didn't do too well, but he's still a good player. And he brought in Shamak, who was key, but he didn't buy enough defenders and stuff, and he didn't know what his best 11 was.
Mm.
And Pulis just sorted everything out. So I think Holloway was out of his depth. And yeah, I just don't really
I suppose credit to Ian Holloway, because I think there was a sense that he kind of realised that he was out of his depth and sort of knocked it on it.
Yeah, it was kind of mutual consent when he left, to be fair.
Sorry?
It was like mutual consent when he left, I think, to be fair. So.
Yeah, I mean, because I know your chairman, Steve Parrish, he's quite good, isn't he? When
He's good at handling situations like that, like the Dougie situation and stuff, yeah.
The thing with Holloway as well is that I think the Championship is his level one. I think next season we'll see proof of that with Millwall, because
he's done wonders with them this year, hasn't he?
For me, as like when I go to watch the games, the style of play is slightly getting better, if you get what I'm trying to say, as in, you know, they're passing the ball better, creating more chances as compared to when, what's his name, was in charge?
Kenny Jacket?
No, it wasn't Jacket, it was Ginger guy. I forgot his name, but the style of football is just much better now, and I think next season we'll see proof of that.
Okay.
I hope not.
So no, who's saying Brendan Rodgers and who's saying Tony Pulis?
I'm saying Pulis.
Pulis.
I'm saying Rodgers, but
Io, you have the deciding vote.
Pulis.
3-1. Sorry, Ruben.
It's cool.
That's a win-win for you anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, what about let's see, what about the signing of the season?
Ooh.
So I mean, that's quite difficult.
Ozil's got to be up there. Fernandinho.
I'm playing. Relax.
Fernandinho. Well, we are going to be doing our worst signing of the season afterwards. So
we don't have to, because we all know the answer for that. So because that will take me 1 hour to describe how much I despise this guy now. But I don't know, sign of the season.
I mean, when you look at,
I'd say Fernandinho.
Fernandinho, but because it was so much peaks.
Yeah, papers, 30 million.
Significance. I think it made a massive. He did secure City's midfield, which was so watertight, and he gave a base for Pellegrini to play a very adventurous way, where he could have Yaya next to him and a Silva Nasri wide with the Aguero with two up front. So I think he was very crucial to success.
If you discount price, he was the best signing.
Let me give you some names to roll off. Then you've got say Dejan Lovren.
I was going to say Gareth Barry.
Gareth
McCarthy
Barry
as well, but McCarthy.
He's on loan,
James
though.
James McCarthy is a baller.
Yeah.
Christian Eriksen?
Yes. Yes, that's good. Yeah, Ericsson. Oh my God, I couldn't believe they got him. Oh mate.
Or Boney. I mean,
my dog. Took a while to get going, Boney.
I'm pretty sure Boney scored the first goal. He scored in his first game of the season against United. I remember that.
Yeah, he had a bit of a rough patch though, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he went through that stage where he couldn't score in the league, but he was banging them in Europe or something like that. I might be wrong.
Yeah. I think I'm going with Ericsson, man.
Ericsson?
Yeah. I think Ericsson, he got Tottenham out of a lot of trouble. Like, when it came to the decisive moments, I think he showed up quite a lot.
Mm.
So I wouldn't say that's a bad shot myself.
7 goals, 8 assists for Christian Ericsson.
Yeah, he's a top player.
Any other candidates?
I'm going for Nandinho. I love McCarthy, man.
Ruben's going for Nandinho. Who said McCarthy?
I'm not saying he should be signing of the season, but he's a top signing ever. Yeah, deserves a mention, definitely.
He's a permanent signing, right?
Yeah, 60. I think he cost them around 10 to 15 million around that region.
Right, okay. Hmm.
Martinez loves him off because he had him at Wigan as well, so.
Yeah. Mickey, who are you going for?
I'm going for Ericsson.
Ericsson.
Spurs. Yeah.
Gaz, it's your deciding vote.
Yeah, Ericsson as well. Ericsson. To be fair.
Okay. Ruben's getting outnumbered here.
Again, but no.
Okay, so worst signing of the season, then I suppose not too much.
Fellaini every single day.
Lamella.
Lamella
can still be good. Fellaini's just useless.
But it is the worst signing of the season. It's not the worst signing of, you know, it's of the season. Lamella didn't have it.
Because I think at the end of the day, Fellaini was a marquee buy, which is what makes it worse.
Mm. What about Van Wolfswinkel?
And I think it ties in with the whole David Moyes thing as well. It's just
actually, yeah, Van Wolfswinkel.
Van Wolfswinkel, because he is disastrous.
Isn't there that stat that he's only had like 4 shots on target since the opening day of the season?
The guy is so dry. Like, oh, I can't even describe to you how.
Good job he didn't bang, because then Alan Shearer wouldn't have to struggle to say his name.
Hold on. Can I just backtrack a little bit? I'm going to go with Nemanja Matic for signing of the season.
Fair enough.
He's signing of the season. He came halfway through the season, but then again, Ericsson really banged for half the season, so
Worst signing for Lonnie, because it's just everything around. It's everything around. It's the fee. It's the meaning of the signing. It was the whole transfer mess. It's just the whole thing was just a disaster. So it has to go to Fellaini, hands down.
He just looks lost. Like, he doesn't know how to pass a ball, how to head a ball. He doesn't know how to head a ball. I mean,
what is with him? It's his off the ball movement. Like, when especially when we're in his positional play, it's just abysmal. It's just abysmal.
The funny thing is, the Belgium coach. I don't know. I can't remember his name, but he said that Moyes used Fellaini wrong, which would be very strange, as Moyes you'd think would know him best. But he said...
No. He has a point.
He said Fellaini's a box-to-box player.
Yeah, I saw a lot of...
he's a deep-lying target, man, is what he is. And United needed a defensive midfielder, and they bought the wrong player, played him in the wrong position. And, yeah, it's just awful.
The Belgian coach said Fellaini's a box-to-box player, and then Moyes...
Yeah, like just the last season, he played as, like you said, a deep-lying... a proper attacking mid, a target man. So, essentially, you play... of Jelovic. Seasons prior to that, he would play as a box-to-box, as a proper number 8. But watching Man United play so much this season, and I'm looking at him like, what is he supposed to be doing? Because him and Carrick are essentially doing the same thing, but Carrick is obviously doing better because he's a better player. But they're both playing alongside each other, and any time Fellaini would break, it would be in a very chaotic and unorganised way.
Yeah.
I remember watching a lot of, analysis of Manchester United and their shape and whatnot, and the gap between the midfield, whether it be Carrick and Fellaini and Carrick and Cleverley and so on, and the strikers were so wide. And I think, because he will be used for Belgium this World Cup, I think you're going to see not a world-class Fellaini by any stretch, but
quite an effective, much improved one.
I think with Fellaini as well, is that there was between him and Carrick or Cleverley, there was no protection for the back four, which made our back four look even worse than it was last season.
The thing is, we've never really had. No, Carrick's always been that protection, but our back four is kind of protected in shape, and we were better in transition. Like this season, like if you see the gaps between, like I remember I was calling it from the first. I think it was the first three games. I said, "Oh, the problem is the shape of United." I'm telling you, everyone's in shape, but I'm saying, "Oh, it's going to change," because I was assuming that Moyes was not that incompetent. Then obviously the shape just never seems to change, because I spotted it early, because we'll lose the ball, and obviously most teams lose the ball here and there, but United will lose the ball, and it was a counter-attack every single time, and we lost the ball. Like, I remember, seems to be casting space between the front line, the midfield, and the back four. So I was like, "Oh, okay, surely it's going to change eventually," but it kind of just didn't change.
Mm. Yeah, Fellaini. So everyone's unanimous with Fellaini.
I think Soldado deserves a naming, but he's a good player. He's a good player. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, I think Spurs is just notorious for fucking playing.
They've making so many people look dead. Oh, I don't know how.
Apparently, Atletico are looking at Soldado.
He'll go then. He'll bang dumb goals.
Yeah, he'll do really well there. He's still talented.
I would take him at Arsenal, to be honest. Personally,
would you?
I would take him at Arsenal.
The thing is, though, Soldado improved when he played with Adebayor. If Arsenal played Soldado with Giroud, that could work.
He doesn't need a Giroud, because he had like Jonas playing off him.
Yeah, to be fair, with the creativity that Arsenal had behind him.
Yeah, because a lot of games Spurs, especially under AVB when he was playing, Spurs had a lot of the ball, but they just seemed they had no spark. I think they're playing like a midfield three of Paulinho, Dembele, and Sandro,
or a lot of runners. Just a lot of runners.
Yeah. So basically, two box-to-box midfielders and an old-school anchorman.
Yeah.
And their wide players, weren't very good. They weren't creative. They're just kind of old-fashioned. Beat the man, put the ball in the box. So
I think he would do well at Arsenal. I mean, he looked very shot of confidence towards the end of the season. I mean, every chance he had, he was snatching at it.
He's a very composed finisher.
He is. Normally, he is.
Yeah, that's crazy. Do you know what it is as well? I don't think he was Sherwood's type of player. I don't think Sherwood he didn't fit into what Sherwood wanted. Whereas I thought Wenger would make him feel like he's a better player than he was showing. If that makes sense. I think he'll do well.
Yeah, I agree. Guys, I mean, I know it sort of ties in with the worst signing of the season, but if we can sort of come away from the worst signing of the season, who would you say is the flop of the season? Whether that be a manager, player,
David Moyes.
Yeah.
The man took the champions.
So bad. He took it to another level. Just like wow. Like when I look back on it now, I just have to laugh it off because like it was bad.
David Moyes had people saying United need to maybe United itself and Percy because he's not quick enough. That's how bad Moyes is. Like he made people think maybe we should sell. Do you know how bad you
Moyes
have to be
was
to make,
so bad that your team
to make people want to sell the best striker in the Premiership?
And he didn't make a sub. No, Moyes was so bad your team would get slapped up 4-0, and he didn't make a sub until like the 89th minute or something stupid like that.
He brought on cleverly
to change the game and get us 3 goals. So yeah.
Yeah, like Moyes is the only guy that could bring on Valencia right back, who will make an error to cost us the game when we're drawing, and then do that next week, and then do that the week after, and the week after, and the week after, and do it 7 times. Like I think this like brings like 6 games where Valencia's cost us because he's playing right back, but Moyes will continue to do this. Like he set precedent in just incompetency. Like.
I wanted to give him a chance. Like I gave him, I was saying, give him a chance. He'll come good, but it was just blind faith. It was literally blind faith for me because
I think it's perfectly okay to you know give a manager a chance whilst they're going through a difficult patch. But you need to see something that indicates progress.
That's the thing with Liverpool. The season before last, you could see what Rodgers was trying to implement at Liverpool. Whereas with Moyes, you didn't understand.
You saw a light at the end of the tunnel. I don't think anyone was as underwhelming this season as Moyes in any way, players, managers, whoever. He just, there never seemed to be hope, ever. So
that's bad. I'm not lying. You're fucking shagged, man. Like,
in a good state,
didn't he? Because, boy.
No, what? Because
crazy about the whole...
Well, because you recommended Moise, you said he
it's that. But you know what that really showed me? Like Ferguson actually doesn't give a fuck. It's the fact that he released a book in the middle of the season that totally, you know, it doesn't help matters when you're basically calling out all of these players that you're only coaching the season before. You know, this like
who did he call out?
He was talking.
About who? No, but he didn't talk anything. But in our current squad, there's not one person that he
was Keane, Beckham that got a bit of a better.
And even Beckham, it was like constructive. He was like, oh, I saw him as a son, and he just didn't agree with where he chased fame. But it wasn't like.
I mean, he had a chapter on Rooney, but he didn't say anything too bad about Rooney.
There was a little bit of Vanish story as well. I think Vanish story he used to have a little. Well, he used to like.
He had a guy at Van Nistelrooy.
I can't remember the specifics, but I remember.
And Jordan Henderson.
This isn't really the best time. I remember thinking to myself, this isn't really the best time to come out of a book.
I think Ferguson gave him. The United were. They had a lot of experience and a lot of good youth players. There was money to spend. Well, maybe the Glazers didn't want to spend it, or Ed Woodward is an idiot, I don't know. There was a very, very talented bunch of coaching staff. Where I think Moyes went wrong was where he kind of, obviously it's good to show your own man, but I think he kind of tore down things too much, tried to change everything a bit too quickly. And obviously if you're playing a brand of football, which the players were not suitable to your players, there's only going to be one outcome. It's in every line of business. If you come in with a motivational strategy where it's not going to motivate and get the best out of your employees, what's going to happen? Your revenue is going to go down. It's just common sense. You feel me? So that's why I can't even blame Ferguson for anything that Moyes did. Like, Moyes, he's a manager, he's a grown man, he's got a club in his hands. It's up to him to handle it. So it's not Ferguson's fault. Ferguson recommended him. It's up to him to step up to that plate, which he didn't. So that's his own fault. No, it's completely Moyes' fault. Nobody else's apart from that guy. Sorry.
No. Relax.
Listen, you're bored, and what's it, Ed Woodward?
Ed Woodward has a nightmare as well. Get a man.
Okay. First things first, Moyes did not want to pay a certain amount for Thiago. So let's take that into consideration. Like, is this guy man?
Apparently,
Giggs.
I read about Giggs, and
the person who wrote that story is one of Moyes' is a poor who's close friends with David Moyes, so I'm not really taking that in, sorry. Giggs had enough sway to tell Moyes not to sign a player, but during season when Giggs is making comments about how we should attack and defend, Moyes won't listen to him. I don't believe that. So he mislistened to him in transfer season, but not during the season.
My thing is, Moyes is apparently very diligent when it comes to transfers. Like, he will come up with his most in-depth, detailed reports. Basically unprecedented stuff seen in the league. And at that point, if he's identified Thiago, because you weren't identifying him before, so you could say Moyes actually did want him, it's not up to him. At that point, it's up to Ed Woodward and the rest
of
the
transfers. Fabregas, Herrera, even Kedira, we had a late bid apparently.
It's the whole setup. It's very similar to what is happening at Barcelona, obviously just different in tweaks here and there. They had ultimately managers that weren't competent enough. No one's going to dispute that, but there's a lot of stuff happening behind the scenes that, because they're not put in the public eye, people don't give enough blame towards. The backroom staff, the board, were just as much at fault.
I will include
Ferguson in that, because ultimately he was the person I recommended. And whilst there was deemable qualities to suggest Moyes as a successor, essentially it was an old boys club network that got him the job, essentially. It wasn't purely on merit. It was the fact that, for me, it was almost like a vain choice as a successor. It's Scottish background, Glasgow background, working class, so on and so on. It wasn't because, you know what, this is the type of coach that we need to take him forward. So, for me, it was across the board.
Yeah, I've been saying I think he should go abroad, Moyes. I think he should go abroad. I've said it before, similar to what Steve McClaren did, and rebuild his name and learn new things from another country. Come back.
One thing I did like about Moyes was how, in terms of the transfers, he was kind of proactive. Like, he went and scouted a lot of players, which kind of seems pointless because he secretly went on trips just for banter. But like, the fact that he actually went out and scouted a lot of players, and from what very, very reliable sources from Old Trafford are saying, that the cruise thing was pretty much ready to go. Van Gaal vetoed. He did a lot of groundwork. And with William, like, we got did a lot of groundwork of that. And obviously, it depends if Mr. Van Gaal wants him or not. So obviously, you could see at least he was trying to build stuff. I think he was scouting that Benasha defender. I haven't seen much of him. Astori. I think his calorie he's playing at. I can't quite remember. And obviously a few midfielders on the continent such as Marquisio and Vidal. But so you can see he wanted the right ilk of players. But I just don't think his philosophy and style of play. In fact, I don't. Was City United, but so yeah, I think he's definitely been the biggest flop of the season.
Okay.
What's next, Lou?
We could do. How about this? Underrated player of the season.
Ooh, good one.
Ooh.
So that, right. I suppose, got, that kind of ties more. In with, like, we could do that, like, as a most improved sort of, or actually we could do both. We could do most improved and we could do underrated player of the season.
Most improved for me, Henderson.
Definitely. And Ramsey.
I wouldn't say Ramsey just because he was playing well from 2 seasons ago. So
I think Chesney's a shout for most improved.
Chesney's a very good
shout. Because he used to do some donut things last season and a season before.
He still does do donut things, by the way. But
yeah, he does. Yeah, but like to a lesser extent.
But to be honest with you, most goalkeepers of that ilk
and of that age as well
have that.
Valdez has that.
Essentially, if you're a sweeper keeper, which is what most keepers are becoming nowadays, you're gonna have that bit of eccentricity.
Yeah.
You know. So for me, it's part and parcel of goalkeeper's development, especially like Chesney's age. Manuel Neuer is still a young goalkeeper, and he does some very risky things. But if you're going to be a super keeper, that's what you're going to be doing. Mm. You know, Hugo Lloris is another one. So,
yeah, guys, Fabian Delph, I think he stepped up the plate this season for Villa.
Yeah, he's been quality too, sir.
I think Lallana's improved quite a lot. I think he's added a bit more productivity to his game.
He's been much better than he was last season, definitely.
Yeah, definitely. But I think I had another one in my head.
I think people raised question marks about Lallana. I don't know whether you would agree with it, about regularly he gets subbed off after like the 60th minute mark.
That's what I was arguing with one of my friends in our group chat about Lallana when discussing if he should start for England, where I don't think he's a 10th. Like, people say, oh, maybe Rooney should start, because he's not really good at defending. If you're playing in that creative slot, the number 10 role, but leave us Lallana. Lallana's very, very lax defensively.
Yeah, and Lallana should definitely not start against. He definitely shouldn't start against Italy, because he's got the creativity, but without the ball, he offers like little to nothing in getting it back. And as you said, he comes off like in the second half quite a lot, and we need players who can last the whole game in the heat. So, I don't want him to start against Italy, but he has improved.
Yeah, 100%.
I think Sturridge has improved. His ability to run the forward line. I think Sturridge always had that ability to score a goal, to finish, to beat his man in the box. But like this season, I've seen a lot more better hold up play for Sturridge. Like in difficult games where the ball could be played to Sturridge, he's making it stick a lot better. He's running the channels a lot better. So I think he's improved quite a lot
Cesar Aspi for Chelsea as well.
Yeah, he's a monster. He's a monster.
Sterling.
Yeah.
Sterling had a great
season. Yeah, yeah.
I think he wasn't particularly like sensational the season before, but he was promising. But this season, he's
But again, he kind of wasn't. I think Rodgers kind of withdrew him. He didn't want to burn him out, similar to how Wayne Rooney in the early stages, Ferguson didn't want to play him all the time because he wanted to burn him out. So I think
Januzaj as well, right now.
Januzaj as well, but I think I think Sterling's definitely a shout for most improved. I think I even think of what's his name, Bakary Sagner. I've given a shout because in recent years he's always been that top level defensively, but this season, like I think he's getting also another dimension where he's been putting a lot of dangerous balls into the box. I think he's improved his game quite a lot.
I tell you what, you lot are going to think I'm crazy, but I think Jenkinson's actually helped him in that regard. Because I think Jenkinson, when he plays, he scares the shit out of me defensively, but going forward, he's actually not bad. He breaks forward quite well, and he's got a decent delivery on him.
I remember the City game, last season, 1-1 game, was Jenkinson had a storm. I was so surprised. I thought that guy was the worst thing I've ever seen in my life.
He's such a powerful runner, and... You know, he does get forward quite well, but it's defensively where he just shuts off, and that's the scary thing about him.
Do you know, I wouldn't say he's improved, but he's upped his performance, and I would say Sam El-Nasri. I wouldn't say he's improved because he's always been a top player.
Consistently, sort of.
Yeah, he's been amazing.
Yeah. I still think he's a fucking bottle job, but that's just me.
Cute.
Nasri's techie, he's just like, I love that guy, man.
I'm trying to think who else in the low and trying to think in more of the lower position clubs.
I think Henderson's quite impressive because you know he's no longer what you would call like a young man. You expect players like Sterling to improve because they're simply young footballers who are playing more games and natural progression. But Henderson sort of came to a standstill, even maybe a decline, sort of, and I think that's what makes his improvement look so great, because he's not that young anymore, and maybe the natural progression has kind of halted. And or do you guys agree with that? Or
I think that's a shout, Henderson. I think Delph is one. Delph should be up there. Mm-hmm. Delph should be up there. Delph, Sterling, and I'm trying to think who else.
I think you had a shout in Chesney as well.
Yeah, Chesney. No, I hate that guy. I'm trying to think who else.
I know who my nomination is for underrated player of the year.
Who's that?
Go on.
Kieran Gibbs.
It's a shout, yeah.
But we talk about Kieran Gibbs too much on the podcast, so maybe we should give it to someone else.
what about Ricky Lambert and Jay Rodriguez? I mean, quite a lot of the Southampton players are quite underrated.
Do you think they're underrated anymore, though? Because I think starting to get a lot of recognition now. Let's not... I think Rodriguez would have gone to the World Cup. So I'm not too sure if they're underrated.
I'm coming from a United fans' point of view, but I think Smalling's very underrated, man. It pisses me off. It annoys me. He gets battered for no reason. Because he gets judged based on his performances at right-back, which I think is just wrong. Because he's not a right-back, he's a centre-back. And if you play him centre-back, you'll see he's a very good footballer.
The thing is I've noticed about Smalling is that, you know when you ask people what makes Smalling so bad, they don't really have an answer for it.
It's
Chris Smalling. There's a stigma that's being attached to Chris Smalling.
Yeah. I said off air that there's certain players that kind of have they're not really fancied, and no matter what they do, it doesn't really come off them, no matter how well they play, until they do something ridiculous. I think Ramsey was one of them up until this season, no one until he starts scoring goals. If you were to say, I think Ramsey's one of the best young central forwards in Europe, people would laugh their heads at you.
If he wasn't scoring the goals,
you see what I'm saying? So, when a lot of people diss Chris Smalling, and I said, Chris Smalling is a quality centre-back, they say, no. I said, okay, name me the shockers he has at centre-back. Name the games he's been shocked at centre-back. Up to this day, no one has asked. So that pretty much says it all. People get an opinion of one person in their head, and it kind of just sticks with us. That's just the world of football fans. But at right back, he's shocking. But centre back, I think he's a very, very underrated footballer. But United have been pants this season, so no one deserves a shout in terms of football.
100%.
Anyone else who's underrated? What about at Palace, Ruben?
Jedinak. I think he's underrated.
Oh, Jedinak, yeah.
Yeah, he's not bad. Not bad at all.
I think Schneiderlin as well, actually. Schneiderlin. Morgan. Yeah. Schneiderlin and Court, they're very tidy footballers. I really rate them highly.
Yeah.
I didn't realise Schneiderlin was only 24.
Yeah, same. I thought it was a bit older than that.
There was a couple calls for him to, I don't know what you guys think, or whether he should have been thought about for the World Cup. There was a couple of calls.
Wasn't he in the standby? Was he in the standby? Schneiderlin?
Not sure.
I'm sure I saw him named in the standby list. I could be wrong.
Also, even I'm not sure if
he was.
I'm not sure if he had much of a great season this year, but a general underrated footballer is Wyman for Villa. I think he's fast.
Oh yeah, Andreas Wyman.
Yeah.
He looks like one of them guys who just go to like Olympiacos or someone. You see him ending it in the Champions League. I don't know. I get that sort of feeling from him. Because I don't think a big Premier League club will actually give him a chance.
Yeah, so I think he's a popular. I think he's a popular player.
Yeah, I'm gonna say McCarthy again. I like that guy. I think he's underrated, man.
I'm glad that he left Wigan because there's too many Macs in that team.
What team?
There's too many what?
Wigan. There's too many Macs in that team. They got like MacArthur.
McManaman.
Yeah, oh, it's too much. It's too much.
The Wigan team, yeah. But I think with Barry, I think the World Cup tainted his name. The whole Ozil thing.
Definitely.
And I think it's unfortunate because he's a good footballer. So.
I've never really been much of a fan of Gareth Barry. I'm not gonna lie to you.
If I was to pick out him and Carrick, I'd go Carrick every day. But I think he's.
I just see him as a iPhone 3GS version of Michael Carrick. So I've never really been much of a big fan of him.
At least you gave him a 3GS and not.
Yeah. But this season, I ain't gonna lie, he has to still play and been quite, and he's been very key in the lot of.
He gives Barkley that role to.
I think it helps that he does play with Barkley though. I mean, and McCarthy as well.
Yeah. That's the thing. Football is all about balance. It's all about balance. Like,
I think if he was to play for Man United, I don't think he would just be getting just as ruined as Michael Carrick. You know, he just.
Oh no! If he's playing for United, he'll be getting shown so many levels. Like, it will be nuts. But I think it shows that with Everton, they're a very balanced side compared to Manchester United. Well, obviously Manchester United have a lot more gifted players than Everton, but we're a very top heavy side. You've got quite a good defence, but they all seem to be in and out of the hospital and a really, really unbalanced central midfield. Mentioned before that our midfield unit is very unbalanced, and a team like Everton shows how much having balance makes a difference. With like Morales, and Defoe wide, or Pienaar, whoever it is wide, and that midfield trio of Barkley and or Osman or MacArthur or Barry, like, it shows how much having balance makes a difference.
Yeah, I agree. Okay.
Should we all pick a player then?
Yeah. Underrated first, sorry. Underrated.
Yeah, I'm going to McCarthy.
Gibbs. I'd give it to Gibbs.
Nah, I'll give it
to Ooh,
actually,
good
no,
shout.
I think we should give it to Gibbs, man. I feel so sorry for him.
Of course you want to give it to Gibbs.
No, but don't you feel sorry for him?
I do. I love Gibbs, but nah. Joel Ward.
I will go with
Ward. I think Joel Ward is a good shot, actually.
Out of spite, I'm going to go with Ward as well.
Yes.
Ruben's finally won one.
See the way he sent Azpilicueta dreaming. Oh, that's brilliant.
Okay, what about underrated? No, what did we just do? Underrated, didn't we?
Underrated.
What was the other
just
one?
Just did underrated, yeah.
And flop the season.
No.
Most improved, huh?
No, we don't.
Most improved,
sorry, that's it. Henderson?
Henderson.
Henderson.
What's the next one? Is it most overrated player of the season?
Yeah, we could do most overrated.
Steven Gerrard!
Yeah, I think it's quite a no contest, to be honest. I know it's so overrated to say Ramsey, but...
Nah, definitely not Ramsey.
It can't compare to Dale.
Not Ramsey, because obviously Ramsey has been a monster this season, but it's, I think, just general consensus of the Arsenal football fans, where they put Ramsey in world football is just senseless, but that's not to do with Ramsey. He's been the best century, arguably one of the best century forwards in the Premiership. It's just overrated this season.
It's not arguable.
Oh, yeah, Gerrard. So, no, because there was games where Gerrard was doing bits second half of the season, but like for what people are saying, the way people are talking,
was in the team of the year and he was nominated.
That's crazy because I don't think he's even been in Liverpool's top four players this season. So
I think that warrants it.
Yeah, Skirtle
overrated as well.
Skirtle, oh my god, see this Skirtle guy. That could get spun by anybody. When I say anybody, it could be a Wayne Rooney, it could be a Cameron Jerome, like anybody could actually get the better Skirtle. Like, he's actually barmy, like how overrated Skirtle is.
Can't stand centre backs who get so much plaudits and
For scoring goals.
And it doesn't make sense.
Vermaelen's a better defender than Skirtle. It's true, though.
No, but Vermaelen's better than Skirtle.
Everyone's like, verbally, the new Vidic, because he was scoring goals. I was like, please. Go on, carry on.
Steven Gerrard with a shadow of a doubt. The thing is,
Skirtle's goals, like,
Liverpool fans don't even rate Skirtle that highly.
Agger's the most talented centre back out of all of them, to be fair.
Yeah, and he doesn't even get to start. It's because Saka costs too much money and they don't want to play Agger at right centre back, so yeah.
Saka, man.
Even this right centre back thing, I hate that rubbish. Like if you are top quality centre back, you could play on either side. Like Rio,
you can play two right foot. You can play two right footed centre backs together. I don't see why you can't play two left footed centre backs together.
Yeah, because Rio Ferdinand used to play one side for United, and for England, because Terry likes to play so like he play another side.
Plays on left. Exactly.
Yeah, I remember this stupid pundit excuse for John Terry when we played Germany, and we made Podolski look like, I don't know, bloody Prime Vicente, we made Closer look like R9. Like, him and Opson had a shocker, and everyone's like, oh, it wasn't Terry's fault because Terry was playing on the wrong, he usually plays left side for Chelsea, and he's playing right side for England. I was thinking, what are you talking about?
I've got a controversial pick, I'm sticking with my guns on this one. Cesar Azpilicueta, whatever his name is. Dave, Big Dave.
It's overrated.
Oh, yes. You're drunk.
No.
Yes. Can I elaborate?
Go on, explain. Yeah.
Elaborate.
Yeah,
okay. On. Essentially, he's been rated as the top centre, the top fullback in the league, right? In my opinion, in modern day football, I can't call you a top fullback if you don't go forward.
Sure.
Okay. If your team is built to protect its defence, which there's nothing wrong with it, then obviously, it helps a lot when it comes to defending versus opposition because it's always 2v1, 3v2 overloads when they're defending. Going forward, I understand that he was playing on the other side, which obviously hinders him a bit because if he was playing right, I'm pretty sure he would have played in a more attacking sense. But people were literally talking about him like he was the second coming of Paolo Maldini. And in my opinion...
I tell you why, I think this is probably, he's probably the first fullback in recent years in Premiership that hasn't been spun by anybody. Because usually there's fullbacks that tend to get spun, like, he could be isolated and no one's beating him. Like, Navas hasn't got the better of him, Januzaj, all like, everybody, no one has got the better of him.
The story's spun him.
I don't know. No, story. The only person I see get the better of him in terms of like, but that was one dribble. Like, if he dribbled a lot of times, would he got the better of him? I'm not too sure. But Lucas Moura,
Put it this way, right? If you're gonna rate, that's like the same thing when we were rating Glenn Johnson. It's literally the Glenn Johnson argument.
I agree.
There's not many fullbacks better than Glenn Johnson. I'll probably say he's top three in the league. That's how good he's going. I'm just saying. Generally speaking, right? Going forward, there's not many fullbacks in the league that fall better than him. But because he gets spun so many times in the other end of the pitch, we don't get the same way. Right? But when we talk about fullbacks going forward, in terms of that's the area where they're lacking, because obviously they're defenders first and foremost, quote unquote defenders. We don't penalise him as much, and that's my only point. It's not to say that I still think he's had a great season, don't get me wrong, but people literally talk about him like he was world class, like he's the best, and I'm like, no.
I do genuinely believe he's one of the best fullbacks about, because I could trust him in 1v1s, and I know that he will not get completely raped. And at the end of the day, defenders, I think the weight in terms of attacking and defending, the weight should be more on defence, because you are essentially you're still a defender.
For me, it also depends on the team,
how you play the game.
Because the way Chelsea played, I do agree with, like, maybe he couldn't get that top ratings like with the likes of Philip Lahm, who is excellent going both ways. So I do agree with that,
he's not even better than Zabaleta.
Oh, Zabaleta's quality, man.
Zabaleta is like world class. Like, for me, people are quicker to talk about Azpilicueta than Zabaleta. And I'm just like, Zabaleta has been,
Azpilicueta,
clearly. Okay, there we go.
Sorry.
There's only so many foreign names I could store in my head before I'd start talking French.
I think with Zabaleta this season, I think it's because the way Hazard just completely and utterly.
I'm not giving the weight to it.
I'm just saying that probably clouded a lot of judgment, because when you asked who was the best right back last season, there was a toss up between Rafael and Zab, but most people said Zabaleta. And this season, beginning of the season, everyone was like, oh no, Zabaleta is the best right back. Until that game when Hazard was just sending this guy shots, milk shot everywhere. Until then, that's when people start saying, oh, the best right back, oh, it's probably Sagna this season. Or, I mean, I think that's just
I've seen the absolute best of the best get spun.
Yeah, exactly. When you're a defender,
you're going to get spun. Same way Messi, the guy who scored almost 100 goals in a season, missed penalties and open goals, the best defenders can get spun.
It's stupid. Unless it's a consistent thing, that's one thing, but I can't think of one right back
that Hazard can't do that to. There's not a single football that Hazard can't do that to.
That's a good point. But I don't know, in terms of saying he's the most overrated player in the Premiership, I think that's a bit of a reach, because at least he's playing at a quite a high level. You feel me? So
for me, because on top of that, like, when it comes to assessing players, I know we're doing, like, obviously overrated player of the season, so we're not really taking into account previous seasons, but a lot of the arguments I saw to suggest that Aspie was the, no, so I'm calling him Aspie now, to suggest he was the best in the league, was based off just one season. And I know maybe I shouldn't really be doing it in accordance to what we're talking about in terms of the topic of it being for 2013, 2014. But to be called the best, you have to be doing it for more than a season. It has to be 2-3 seasons at least. And, you know, he's not even been the best fullback this season. So I just saw him as being marginally overrated. Marginally.
Okay.
I can't wait if it hears that, but that's going to be funny.
I did that just for Ife.
Ife will be twitching when he hears that. Guys, does anyone have any topics they want to add in quickly before we move on to some listeners' questions?
We're going to talk about Europe in general.
We could do that.
I wanted to go back to some of the stuff that we were hearing, the predictions about European football outside. Things like who's going to have a better season, like Neymar and Bale. I remember clearly, which was who's going to be more influential out of Bale and Isco and Neymar and Di Maria and so on and so on. And I predicted Isco to be more influential for Real Madrid long term than Bale would be. But I would have to say that I was surprised and to a small extent proved wrong by how good Bale was. I didn't predict him to have as good of a season as he has had. However, I wasn't surprised, and I do think I'm a bit uncomfortable with how highly people are rating Bale's season and not taking the fact that he's been part of a great Madrid team. He's not been a talisman. And that's my opinion.
No, I think the thing with Gareth Bale, even last season with Gareth Bale, I think if you actually watch the football games, that's why I don't really like to debate with Match of the Day fans. Like, if you actually watch the games, in terms of, I think Bale's still got a long way to go. That's why I said I wouldn't put him in my top 20 players in the world.
He had moments of magic, like he would last minute free kick. Or West Ham, for example.
Those games, he was largely anonymous, whereas the, obviously the top tier, obviously where everyone aspires to be with like CR7 and Messi, they can, even Luis Suarez in our league this season, where they could, throughout 90 minutes, they're probably involved with play and being a havoc for at least 75% of, and they will have the match winning moments. Yes, some games they may not be playing well and they have the match winning moments, but in general, 9 out of 10 times during a game, they're just a threat throughout and they're getting the goals and assists, the productivity with the influence. Whereas Gareth Bale hasn't really had the influence in a lot of these games, but he's been doing the talismanic type thing where he's hitting a winner or he's scoring a free kick or type of thing. So that's why I do think
somebody asked me like a really good question during the Champions League final, and they were like, you know, who would you say are Madrid's best players? And I said Bale isn't in the top five, and people were like pretty surprised. And I was like, no, like even he can score the winner, it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, Ramos is more crucial. Ronaldo, Benzema, Di Maria, Modric, Xabi Alonso to an extent. Like they could have done what they've done this season without Gareth Bale. I'm certain of that.
I remember I had an argument with you boys about Di Maria, Isco, and Bale. Because with Di Maria, I thought last season I've always been a massive fan of Di Maria more than anyone, but I still put Bale slightly ahead of Di Maria just because of his ability to be a match winner. But I think this season when he moved to Real Madrid, I think I overrated Bale's actual technical ability until I saw him in the Real Madrid team. When I saw Bale in tight space, because I always knew that he wasn't the greatest in tight spaces, but I didn't think, obviously he's not awful, but like compared to the likes of Isco, Di Maria, Karim, Ronaldo, where they're in tight spaces and they kind of thrive off it, they suck the defenders in, then they either release the ball, etc., keep it moving. Bale wasn't really as in sync with Real Madrid, whereas in the games away from home, I think he's been better away from home, where they're playing on a counter-attack. A lot of space.
For me, the reason I bring it up is more for kind of the disrespect being shown to Neymar. Like, listen, man, Bale is probably not going to have a better season than he's had this season for a while. Like, Bale, for me, he will never be Ronaldo's successor, in my opinion. That's me, because he just hasn't got the ability. Neymar will be that guy. I've never seen Bale winning World Player of the Year. I see Neymar become the best player in the world. And it's just like, I don't think people are...
I'm not too sure why that will happen while Lionel Messi is out. Because I think Barcelona are just built around Lionel Messi. Well, I think Neymar needs to be in a team.
He needs to be the talisman.
Yeah, he's the first one. In every single game, he wasn't just having a blind attempt to influence the whole game, but he was a match winner in every single game. Like, he scored a right foot volley in the first game, a left foot volley in the second game, got like two assists in the third game, scored a free kick in the, was it, semi-final, and he was a man of the match in the final. He also scored another worldie.
You've got to understand that. Hold on, sorry to cut you. I'm agreeing with that, and I totally understand the point about Neymar being needed to be a talisman for him to be at his best. That's why I felt the Barcelona switch was a bit weird. What I'm trying to say is that even with Messi about, you've got to understand that Neymar was playing in a badly run Barcelona team. Bale was playing in a very well-coached Real Madrid team. If Barcelona was well-drilled if Barcelona was well-drilled as Real Madrid were, I think the comparison between Neymar and Bale over the course of the season has been much different. I also think whilst Bale was injured during the beginning of the season and that kind of delayed his progress, Neymar has had injury problems throughout, which hasn't helped. And for me, it was just kind of like just a general kind of fickle, oh, who's better out of Neymar and Bale now? Like, one's got Champions League and one's the winner in, you know? And it's just like, you have to take it to...
Next season it could be a different story. Yeah, I don't really like what I kind of had. I don't know how true this is, but from what I was watching, my opinion with Martinez Barca was he was trying to accommodate as many players as possible rather than having a system. Because, for example, you'll see games where it was Fabregas, Busquets, Xavi midfield with Iniesta left, Neymar right. And Messi up front. I don't think that was. I think he just had to make tough decisions. Where okay, even Xavi has to sit on the bench, or maybe Cesc has to sit on the bench because Iniesta. I think Iniesta's got to play that number eight position. You've got to have two, especially the way Barca play, where they have a lot of ball and they don't really like. They're not really a physical team. I think they need two wing forwards that are very dangerous. So I think it had to be like Pedro with Neymar, wide playing with Messi because a lot of games it just looks. It was just, their attacks are just too predictable. Didn't have enough punch in them, and playing Neymar on the right just didn't make any sense to me. Like, I've never really seen Neymar playing the right. He's always been off the striker slash left wing forward slash the actual main front man. So I don't know, man. I do personally think that Neymar, in terms of footballing ability, I think over time he's going to show that he's another level to have now, and that's in my own personal opinion. And I don't think Bale could even chat to guys that Hazard, Mario Götze and Thiago
like,
all in his 80s.
Because for me, at the end of the day, like it's a thing where no one's doubting, you know,
Bale's
the great season he's had. But for me, it's been a great Madrid season as much as it's been, great individual seasons are, Kaká in 2006, 2007. Those are great individual seasons. Like, he's the reason they won the
championship. Let's not take it from Bale. Like, he had a great season. I don't think he had
a great season, but like for me, it's a thing where, look man, Modric is just as good. Di Maria, Ronaldo, Benzema, Ramos, Pepe, these guys are just as good.
Modric is better, not just as good. Modric is
I'm just rein it in a little bit. Just rein in the hype a little bit, man. Let's not get lost in the hype.
what players from Europe would you like to see play for your respective clubs and just to come for Premiership in general?
Oh my God! So please,
God, we need to do a whole podcast for this.
Please, I will throw any family member down the flight of stairs for Yavi Mascherano.
For who?
Yavi Mascherano. By any means necessary, that guy has to come to Arsenal. This whole Fabregas talks. I need to be on air for this, so I'm glad I have the opportunity to talk about this because I wasn't planning to, but nice come. Arsenal fans, all of you out there that would like to see Cesc Fabregas at Arsenal Football Club at the expense of a defensive midfielder, a left forward, and a striker, kill yourselves, okay?
Leroy.
It's for me, it's just the whole Cesc Fabregas hype right now. It's just sentimentality. It's just fantasy football level desires right now. So that's who I wouldn't want to see at Arsenal. Who I would like to see, like I said, Yavi Mascherano. Striker-wise, I don't think we're going to get a marquee signing. I think it's going to be, I've always said it, it's going to be a potentially world-class striker. It's not going to be a world-class striker. Whether that's Morata, I don't know why Morata would leave right now, especially with Benzema staying. I'm assuming Benzema is going to be the number one striker. I'm expecting Morata to be their number two. Why would he want to leave? I would say there's a couple of Colombian strikers. There's one called Tio Gutierrez, but I don't know. I've seen him play. He's decent, but I don't know if he's the type of striker that we need. But he's very good. Luis Muriel, of course. Kevin Volland, massive fan. See striker over at Offenheim. Like I said, it's going to be potentially world-class striker. It's not going to be the striker that you think we're going to need. Defensive midfielder, Mascherano, Schneiderlin, Bender, I'm 50-50 about. Left forward.
Is Javi Martinez an absolute myth?
He said no.
Yeah, it's unrealistic. It's very unrealistic. If it happens, I'd be very surprised. But, and this whole Sanchez over Pedro business as well, it's just another thing that's just a myth. Just like, really?
Really?
Saul Sanchez.
Would you give either of them back?
Listen, if I couldn't get Pedro and I had to have Sanchez, I'll take Sanchez. Don't get me wrong. But
Pedro,
Sanchez for me is an upgraded version of Theo Walcott.
What's wrong with that?
He's an.
Is that's a compliment?
Well, No. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it, but it's more towards what we need right now. Walcott on the right wing is sufficient. He's good enough. Now, unless we're going to be happy about Walcott becoming a second string player, which isn't too bad, I wouldn't want him at the expense of a proper left wing forward. I think penetration on the left is more important than reinforced penetration on the right, which is what Sanchez will give us. Pedro can play on either side.
Why can't Sanchez play left?
Technically,
Sanchez is nowhere near as good on the left.
But then Chamberlain's one footed, and I would say that he's better on the left than on the right.
No, but my point is like.
Chamberlain is used to playing in central area, so he's used to coming in. Sanchez, his game is getting around the outside and making that run off the wing into the penalty area. Sanchez, he's a good dribbler, but he's not an excellent dribbler. Whereas he can on the left, he's a lot easier to stop. Whereas Pedro, I don't know. With Pedro, I think if I was an Arsenal fan, the only reason why I would take Sanchez over Pedro is the fact that Sanchez gives you an option where he could probably play as an orthodox number 9. Mm. Apart from that, every single thing that Sanchez is good at and he does, Pedro does, and to a better extent. That's just fact. Like if you watch them,
people really underrate Pedro in terms of like him as just a player overall, because obviously they just see him as an off-the-ball runner for Messi and Iniesta and whatnot. Watching for Spain, because he plays a different role for Spain. For Spain, he actually plays pretty much like a wide winger, like a proper winger. And his dribbling ability is so unreal. Like
Pedro's extremely. The reason why I think Pedro for Arsenal would be a dream is because Arsenal always talk about we need more runners, blah blah blah. See with Arsenal, obviously, realistically, you're not going to get. It doesn't seem that any top tier strikers are available at the moment. Obviously, you never know, that may change. But see with Pedro is he could play on that left side, and he will get you 15 goals plus. Because he's an excellent finisher, he's a very, very smart footballer, he's very versatile, he can play on either flank extremely well, and he can get around the outside on both flanks and come around inside on both flanks.
He can play a number of roles. Yeah, it's not just a fact
To be honest though, guys, I think the whole Pedro Sanchez talk is a bit...
Yeah, I think
Because we're not going to get either, it's going to be Carlos Vela.
Yeah, but I think as an Arsenal fan, I think you should be very happy to get. I think any Premiership team at the moment should be very happy to get either Sanchez or Pedro because they are both players. But obviously, I do think that Pedro is a separate level to Sanchez. Because I think Pedro, in my opinion, he's top 5 wing type forward players in world football. In my opinion, so I think I would rather take Pedro.
Okay, but guys, we're probably gonna have to leave the whole European thing there.
All right.
We'll have to move on some listeners' questions because we're going to need to wrap it up in a few minutes. So, does anyone have any good ones we can rattle through quite quickly?
I have a good one, but I don't know if you guys want to go first.
Go on, Mickey, go on.
Okay. I have from... So, who you say? I have one from Skriptov.
Mm-hmm.
Or Elijah, saying, what are the best type of strikers to have?
Oh, that's vague.
I like the
Cavani, Lewandowski type forwards, just like they can do everything. Drop wide, drop deep, put in a tackle, win headers, complete forwards. Cavani's my favourite striker on the planet, basically.
I don't think Cavani's as complete, I don't think it's on the same sphere as Lewandowski. In terms of all-round play, I think he could do.
Oh, yeah.
He's still talking. I can't hear him.
I think he's gone.
Well, I was going to say, you know, like a lot of answers to this question, or a lot of, like, this type of question, I think it depends on the system. I think, in terms of my preference, you know, I grew up on the Ronaldos and the Henrys. I like strikers that play like wingers. So, guys that like to play that wide, you know, the Luis Suarez's, like I said, Kevin Volland's, Carlos Bacca as well. I like, you know, I like guys that are, I like strikers that are good one-on-one, you know, good one-on-one strikers. And I think those are the type of strikers that you can make room for in any team.
Mm. I think my sort of striker, you know, is the Van Persie sort of striker. I mean, not necessarily blessed with pace, but
you put in front of goal, he's going to score.
And his creativity for everyone else.
Yeah.
It's just like,
I know it's a bit cheeky to kind of name it as well, but I think if we're gonna have any type of striker, Messi between 2010 to 2012, the false number nine. I mean, he didn't kind of create the role because, you know, Francesco Totti was doing that role for a while, but remember before. And that kind of false number nine has always been around to a certain degree, even from like the 50s and whatnot. But I love false number nines. Like, I love false number nines.
Guys, does anyone have any more listeners' questions before we wrap it up? One from Condinio. We didn't really touch on it. Pochettino's appointment at Spurs. Does anyone have any thoughts on that?
It'll be interesting, I think. But I think it'll be a good. He's a good appointment, don't get me wrong. It'll be interesting to see how the likes of Adebayo, maybe Adebayo, the established players at Spurs, how they deal with the way he goes about things. In terms of, I've heard he's quite regimental in terms of fitness, you know, training, double sessions, etc., etc. So I think that would be interesting. But good appointment. Don't get me wrong. Good appointment.
I'm annoyed.
Why?
So annoyed
that he went to Spurs.
Oh my god! Like, because they always ruin good coaches, man. Like, for me, it's a thing where I know he's gonna get sacked over something so stupid, and it's gonna ruin his reputation. I hate seeing good coaches get treated like shit. So I'm just annoyed. And like, I hate the fact that Spurs, because they sack their coaches so much, they always take up good coaches that I would love to have at Arsenal. Like, I think my hate, when they eventually end up signing Frank de Boer, my hate for Spurs will have been taken to
another level. I hope he doesn't go there.
Oh, yeah, of course he's going there.
So you don't think
Pochettino's going to last?
He's not going to last there, please. Spurs are not breaking into the top four.
And that's what they want, yeah. Mm.
And that's what, and that's the requirement, right? He's not bringing him to the top four. They're going to sack him. They're going to bring in Frank de Boer. I'll be surprised if he breaks into the top four. Unless they change their agenda. And I will hate Spurs even more. So that's my thoughts on
that. I mean, I was reading something the other day about how Tottenham have sort of changed their stance on things. They're going to be trying to look for more longevity and trying to build into his top four, not expecting it season after season to no avail. So maybe Levy will give him a chance. I know Levy's a bit of a prick, but
I think he has to, because otherwise he needs to be looked at now.
Levy needs to be looked at now from Spurs fans, because
my thing is, how on one hand can you be so stingy in terms of not paying an extra few million for a Matinho or Leandro de Mato, but you're willing to
fork out all this money and, like,
I don't know,
severance and stuff.
Yeah, like, what? Nah, I have no time for them type of clubs, man.
Yeah.
It's even worse.
He's had about 10 managers in his tenure as chairman or chief exec, whatever he is.
Yeah, he's had quality managers. He's had Juan de Ramos.
Juan de Ramos, Harry Redknapp, Andre Villas-Boas, Tim Sherwood.
Glenn Hoddle was there for a bit.
Was Glenn Hoddle there for Daniel Levy, was he?
Yeah.
Did he bring Christian Gross in?
No idea.
David Pleat was caretaker for a couple.
David Pleat.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's actually ridiculous when you think about it, the amount of managers that they've had.
Yeah.
And their unrealistic aims. I think when you look at it, Manchester United are better. Manchester City are better. Arsenal are better. Who else is there? Sorry.
There's just teams that are better than them. And it's obviously, it's good to have higher aims, but it's also good to be realistic. You've got to balance the two in terms of realism and ambition. I don't think he's done that.
Okay. Guys, I've got one more question before we wrap things up completely. Tom O'Brien asks... well, we'll choose a couple of these. Underrated and overrated goalkeepers, defenders, midfielders and strikers.
Underrated.
I'm going to say something controversial with the goalkeeping thing. I think Fabianski started to become very overrated.
Yes and no. I understand why you think he's overrated, but at the same time,
because Arsenal fans started talking like there was no difference between him and Chesney, and like there is such a difference between him and Chesney. Even if it's like in just one category in terms of like aerial ability and dealing with, and command of area, yeah, there is such a the difference is huge, and I think even you see that in the FA Cup final in terms of like organisation and stuff like that. I get a feeling that those goals don't go in if Chesney's there. I can't explain it, but there's a confidence Chesney gives you from set pieces and balls into the box, which is like, it's a bit unfair on him because he's actually a good goalkeeper and I wish him well at Swansea, but yeah.
I also say underrated Victor Valdez. Victor Valdez is literally one of the best goalkeepers of our time.
Mm.
May even go down as one of the best goalkeepers of all time. Yeah, I'm assuming I'm going to go out and even say that.
Okay.
If you think about, for me, he's a Sergio Busquets of goalkeepers. But I think people are not really caught up to what Valdez has done, which is essentially popularised sweeper keepers. I don't think it's a new thing, because I think Van der Sar was one to an extent. But really having your goalkeeper as a primary, not your primary, but as in your first playmaker, in terms of building from the back,
used
to ping balls better than certain centre midfielders. And he did that on top of being a great goalkeeper. Like, if you think of how exposed Barcelona could be on the break, especially, he pulled out some magnificent saves. And it's just a shame that not only because of his great quality as a goalkeeper, but also of his leadership in the Spain camp, you know.
Yeah.
Casillas is there.
Hugo Lloris should definitely deserves a mention as well. For me, Hugo Lloris is like the best goalkeeper in the Premier League.
I think it's a fair shout.
Personally,
I don't know about Bernardo though.
Yeah, I mean it's quite close between. But the reason I say Hugo Lloris is just because he is the best sweeper keeper I've ever seen in my life.
I think that, with that, it depends on the way your team plays the game. If you have a high line, Spurs tend to do. Lloris is he needs to be that. Sweeper keeper. Whereas with United this season, we've had, for example, Vidic and Ferdinand at the back. We tend to defend deeper.
So he doesn't need to be the sweeper keeper, does he? No.
So it's just, it depends.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Most favourite defender?
Yeah, do you want to go? Let's just quickly run through these because we're running out of time.
I would say most underrated. I'm not going to come up with a lot of controversial ones. I would say Company's been underrated this season. Boom. Yeah, I said it.
Company's
been underrated. Demichelis, I think. I think for his second half. Yeah, I think Demichelis is underrated. Well. I think Demichelis becomes quite a scapegoat for anything that goes wrong. And he's another Chris Smalling in a way.
In a sense, yeah.
And don't get me wrong, I think he has been exposed for his lack of pace, but that's due to obviously his age and whatnot. But
his age set up as well, like
the way City play the game is they're very expansive, so their centre backs are gonna be exposed at times.
Yeah.
And
I would say two other shouts for underrated defenders will stick up centre backs, but no. I'll say underrated would be Mats Hummels and Gerard Piqué. I think Gerard Piqué has been one of the best defenders in the world this season. I mean, he's been better than a lot of centre halves. Most overrated. Like I said, I'm very funny about defenders that get protected that much and then are lauded as the best defenders. So Terry would have to be in there as well.
You think he's overrated?
I think Terry's been overrated this season.
This season, okay. I thought you just meant in general, Fergie. All right, cool.
Yeah,
this season, I think, has been overrated. I think any defender that gets protected a lot, I mean, you still have to have a certain defensive quality to even organise a back four to that level. But I'm always going to, out of preference, I'm always going to lean towards defenders that are exposed more and show their competency.
Okay.
Because it's more about them as individuals as opposed to the unit.
What about midfielders and strikers? Let's quickly run through these guys.
Underrated
striker, Giroud. Yeah, I said it. Come at me on mentions. I don't care. He does not deserve the stick you lot give him. Not you lot in the chat, in the pod, but on Twitter, you lot are all cunts.
Fucking hell. Gosh.
Wow. Yeah.
I think midfielders kind of get their ratings in general.
Yeah. The midfield one.
I'll say this. I think Fabregas has been underrated this season.
Who?
Fabregas has been very underrated this season.
I think everyone's just forgot about Fabregas. Everyone's forgotten how fucking awesome he is.
I think Fabregas up until.
I think it's the same with Wilshere. I think that's the same with Jack Wilshere. I think people have forgotten how good he is.
People have got short memories.
I
think this season. Pogba's been overrated. I think Pogba's actually been kind of average.
You think?
He was much better last season.
Much better last season.
Okay.
Much better.
I haven't watched too much of Italian football, so I couldn't really comment on that, to be honest. But... what about strikers?
Overrated strikers.
Oh yeah, Lampard's still overrated by Chelsea fans, by the way.
Really?
They still think he's like he should start for England and stuff. Some of them, anyway. Like he really offers so little now.
Mm.
Anyway, moving on. Strikers.
Rated strikers.
Overrated strikers. Oh.
I want to say Daniel Sturridge.
I want to say Lukaku, but not. I want to say him, but I don't want to say him at the same time. I think
really want to say Daniel Sturridge, which is weird because I think he should start for England. But I hate the fact that people are literally calling him, like, one of the top five strikers in Europe.
Yeah,
I was like, wait, what?
I think that's a bit exaggerated.
Right, underrated striker, Danny Welbeck.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Danny Welbeck is a good player. Like, if he had more chances through the middle, it's because he plays, like, with Van Persie and Rooney, he's competing. If he had more chances down the middle and he scored more goals, people would say he's brilliant because most other aspects of his game are really good.
Yeah, I think with Van Gaal coming in, I think it'll benefit him hugely.
Yeah, I love Welbeck.
I think
he's class.
I think people understand that a lot of Man United players, even like even cleverly, these guys when they were young were getting coached with the Kerver style of football, which is a lot of ball mastery, a lot of technical work, both feet. And Danny Welbeck, I think it's evident in his play, even cleverly to an extent. And I think
if Cleverly played for a worse team, people would say he was alright.
I think Cleverly Everton with Martinez would do very, very, very well.
Yeah,
very
me too.
Mm. Alright, guys, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you to everyone for sending their listeners questions. Very sorry we couldn't get through the large majority of them. I think we only managed to get through three. But thank you to my guests. Thank you for joining me on another episode. But join us for the England game where we're going to be giving you a live in-game stream discussion. Maybe you'll see some of the guys on tonight's podcast on that tomorrow. So this is going to be a new feature we're going to try. So join us for that and have a great weekend. Cheers, guys.
Pleasure.
Cheers.
Take it easy, people. Bye. Nice one. Bye.
problem. It's not my problem.